Hello and welcome to the Business of Authority. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Rochelle Moulton.
And today we've got an email challenge for you.
Yes, for 2021. Or actually, I guess whatever year you're listening to this.
Yeah. So this is a topic near and dear to my heart, and a lot of folks have been asking me about it recently because I sent an email to my list about email, so super duper meta. Because a fellow asked me on Twitter, he didn't ask me, he just put it in general. He said, if there was one marketing channel you could use in 2021, if you could only use one, what would it be? And my answer was email by a mile, nothing else is close. Yeah. And then we got into a little conversation about it. And we talked about things like over the course of the emails, talked about getting started, frequency, how to grow the audience. And so we thought we'd sort of try that today, share that with you, the dear listener.
Yeah, and especially I want to put that an extra emphasis on growing the audience, because I think we've got a couple kinds of people that are listening to this. And one kind of person says, oh, I don't know if I can do an email list. I'm thinking about content. Like, what do I write about or talk about? And then we've got another group that says, okay, I've got the content stuff figured out. What I can't figure out is how to grow my email list beyond like my pack of pals.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you want to do just a quick bit on people who maybe need to get started or are having trouble getting started?
Yeah, I think that's a good place to start. And maybe we could just say right up front, what we're thinking is that we would come back to this topic maybe once a quarter. I mean, certainly more often if people are interested in it. But I think part of this is that whatever we do, it doesn't happen in a nanosecond. Yeah. It takes some time. So we'll plan to come back with at least three more episodes on this idea. And we want to hear, you know, how some of these ideas work for you and what else you're doing that's working.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd love that. Okay, so let's say, just to kind of follow the timeline, the progression or the life cycle of an email list, and we'll end with audience growth because at that point you're rolling. Mm-hmm. But if we start with getting started, I guess the first thing I would say is like, why start a mailing list in the first place? And I think anybody building an authority business needs to be writing and speaking on a regular basis. Writing, speaking, mm-hmm. writing, speaking. And the kind where you write or how you write or what the output looks like could be very different. It could be books, it could be blogs, it could be on Medium, it could be social media, it could be white papers, it could be blah, 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 comic books. Mm-hmm. It could be anything. I'm a giant fan for many reasons of email for a number of specific reasons that we could go into if you wanted to. But I think we've probably talked about them before. And email is, it's got the best combination of features, I think, for someone who's trying to grow an audience and be perceived as an authority on their, whatever their specialty is.
Well, it's that intimacy level is so critical because people feel like, because they do, I guess, they've got a direct line to you. Mm-hmm. And you can listen to what they're saying. You can pay attention to it. You can say, oh, that's really interesting. And you might change some planks in your point of view. Or you might just decide that maybe you're not communicating it in a way that more people can understand it. So you start to shift mm-hmm. how you talk about particular things. It's a petri dish, really.
Yep. Increases awareness and trust in your audience, but I think it also makes you better at what you do. Well, mm-hmm. if you're doing it daily, it's going to make you better at what you do. If you're doing it weekly, for me, it never got there. When I ever did weekly, it was torture, and I felt like I always had writer's block. But daily is actually much easier for me, and I feel like if you can maintain an increased frequency, it burns off all of the shallow stuff within a month, and then you have to start going deeper, which is a place that maybe far fewer people are going deep. Therefore, you come up with these insights and things that make you better at what you do and make you create intellectual property and all this other stuff. So lots of good reasons to start a mailing list.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Another thing about it that I think is unique is, Rochelle's kind of alluding to this, you can broadcast to thousands, but they can all just hit reply and by default get into a private conversation with you, which might sound scary in terms of time commitment, but it's actually super valuable.
It's wonderful. Yeah, plus, if you like, I'm thinking of the software developers in the audience already, but if you like any sort of discourse, it's really helpful because people, for the most part, are thoughtful and kind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes they'll give you an attaboy or an attagirl just when you need it. Mm-hmm. And other times they'll give you a perspective you just hadn't thought of. And so it winds up being really constructive feedback.
Yes.
That's helpful. And yes. I mean, there's nothing else exactly like it.
Right. People will sometimes say, well, what about blog comments? But blog comments are public.
Yeah. So,
and you wouldn't get the kind of personal, intimate details that you get when somebody hits reply and sends a private message to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so getting started, so like, let's say you're convinced that it's a good idea, that's the channel that you want to use to do your primary writing. And then the next question always is, what should I write about? How often should I do it? And I was just talking to a coaching student yesterday about, he's sort of drunk the Kool-Aid on daily. Anybody that hangs around in my Slack room for long enough is eventually going to try daily. And he said, but is it the right thing to do now? Is now the right time to do it? Or should I focus on other things that we're working on? And I was like, well, here's the test. And I would give the same test to you, listener. If you can sit down and in 15 minutes, come up with 30 ideas for really atomic single point messages, like very, very, not like a, you know, 100 bullet point manifesto of everything you know and have ever learned, but just one specific point about your area of expertise. And it's fine if there's an open loop. In other words, it's fine if you bring up things in the message that aren't resolved or explained, as long as you can communicate your point reasonably well. And then the next message you could answer, it could be about the thing that you didn't answer in the first one. So it has this sort of serial mm-hmm. effect. And if you can come up with, you know, 30 ideas in 15 minutes, then you're ready to roll. And you could start a daily mailing list around this area of expertise that you're focused on, and you will probably never run out of content, because doing a daily practice like that, it's, I don't know what happens to your brain, but it's happened to everybody I talk to who's switched over to daily from weekly, is that all of a sudden they see ideas everywhere in their daily life. It's like your brain, this mechanism awakens in your brain to like start noticing stuff for your daily list. And you just, these ideas just come out of nowhere. It's great. It's fascinating. And it's counterintuitive.
Yeah. I'm not going to disagree with you, Jonathan. I'm just going to add like an additional way to think about this, because I don't think daily is for everybody. And when I say everybody, I mean your audience. So I think, you know, it's a great practice to write, or maybe I should say to produce every day. And it's a great practice to publish, because if you're writing and not publishing, you're not getting any feedback and you're not really helping your audience or yourself. But I think the other part you want to think about is, does your audience resonate with daily? Mm-hmm. And I think when our audiences are independent professionals of some sort, a lot of times they do resonate with daily.
Yeah.
If they're big corporates, they tend not to, unless it's about something that's more personal. You know, there's lots of people who are in the C-suite who subscribe to things like, you know, how to be healthier, you know, how to lose weight, you know, how to make more money, those kinds of things. So it depends on your topic. But I would also say, look at your audience when you think about the frequency, as well as what's going to work for your content.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Completely agree. I had a lot of people, not a lot, but a noticeable percentage of my list bail when I switched from weekly to daily. They were like, there's too much email. I was like, all right, it's not for you.
Yeah.
You know,
like, yeah.
Save them in a folder and read them on Sunday. But your point is well taken. Let's see. I've got a couple of mailing lists that I'm on a number of dailies. So I practice what I preach in reverse, mm-hmm. I suppose. And I am on a couple of weeklies, and they're really good, but they're much longer. I mean, they're like, not incidentally, they both come out on the weekend, and they both talk about, you know, sit down with your, this is your Saturday or Sunday morning coffee read. You know, it's kind of like a little newspaper thing. And they're like a thousand words or more, very dense, lots of stuff in there. And I'm on one that's monthly, and I love being on it, but I barely ever read it. It's super long, very in-depth. So there's a balance to be struck between the length in the, like you said, readers' preferences and all that stuff's definitely true. You are never going to find one format that will please everyone in your audience. And some people will always come back and say, oh, if you just did it weekly, or if you offered a serial format,
A digest.
That's it. Thank you. A digest version. It's like, yeah, I could do that. Or you could do it.
And sometimes those people wind up just hitting delete when you send that anyway. They're like, I don't have time for that. So I'll wait till the next one. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I just think it's dangerous to listen to feedback from one member of your audience.
Yeah.
Because there will always be somebody who doesn't like the way that you're doing whatever it is that you're doing.
Yes. But I think we could both agree that less frequently than weekly starts to get a little like,
yes. Yeah. It doesn't feel, I don't know. I don't feel as engaged as I do.
Right. Like my monthly one that comes through, I'm always surprised. I like forgot about it. Yeah. I don't forget about the Saturday and Sunday morning ones. I don't forget about those. It's like, oh, it's Saturday. Like the John Dick's email is going to come through. And mm-hmm. that's actually his name. I'm not making a joke. and on Sunday, the Sunday dispatches get Sunday. I mean, Paul Jarvis.
Not anymore.
Unfortunately, I will miss that. But that's the point. I will miss it. If the monthly one that I'm on that I can't even remember the name of doesn't show up in my inbox, I will not notice. I'll, 6 months later, I'll be like, oh, I didn't get one of those emails because it's about emailing.
Yeah. And those are the ones you unsubscribe to because you go, who is this person? What are they sending me this for? I don't need this. And you're in a mood when you see it and you go, unsubscribe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're not part of your ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's say that everybody's in agreement that having a mailing list is a good idea. It's a good fit for them. And they're either going to do weekly or more regularly than that. Do we want to talk about deciding what to write about? I feel like that might be a different topic. I think
maybe just big picture, because, there's a whole process to go through to decide what to write about. Mm-hmm. I think the point I would make is go through that process.
Yeah.
This is not about, oh, it's Tuesday and today I'm thinking about this. I mean, it can be that once you've identified your lanes, what mm-hmm. you're going to write about. But yeah, you do have to, I think you need to go through that process of deciding big picture what you're going to write about and kind of what lanes you're going to play in before you really start. Because that way you're not wasting your time.
Yeah, I think of it like a solar system. We've talked about this before, I'm mm-hmm. sure, where you've got the sun in the center that provides the gravitational pull to keep all of these different topics, the planets, keep them revolving around the central theme instead of just flying apart. The way that I used to blog years ago, it was just these random topics that did not hold together because I didn't have a central theme. So knowing what your big idea is or your theme or your mission or your really higher level purpose, like whatever it is, and then kind of making a promise to the reader. Like if you sign up to my mailing list and you read it, I promise you will be entertained or you will get insights about business mm-hmm. or you'll learn more about pricing or how to do something. There's some promise. And it could be explicit or implicit, but I feel like if it's there, if you know what it is and stick to it, I think it will dramatically increase the ease of writing. So you can still write about different topics, or even like I write about my day a lot, or mm-hmm. my email be inspired by my day, but it's still about ditching hourly, not trading time for money.
Exactly.
So if you know what that central theme is, you can write about firewood and still pull it back to the main, the main theme.
As I recall, you did.
Yes. I had a whole series of camp firewood stories. Do we need to go? And then, once you have that, I guess that's the point at which I would see if I could come up with 30 ideas in 15 minutes. If you had trouble with the 30 ideas in 15 minutes exercise, then maybe it's like, wait a second, spend 15 more minutes or 15 minutes first deciding what your central theme might be. And what mm-hmm. what the sun is, and then what the planets are around that sun, the different topics and more tactical subjects, and then take another shot at that list, but probably, I think probably most people listening, I'm just guessing, have a pretty good idea of what they would write about, what their expertise is, who the audience is, what the promise might be. So hopefully not, hopefully if you don't have that, then maybe going through those exercises would help.
Yeah, I think sometimes what people miss is they have the, you know, this is who I'm writing for, and this is generally what I want to write about, but then they get stuck because their topic feels so broad. Yep. And that's where narrowing it down to no more than three or four lanes, you know, really mm-hmm. will help you. And then so you can start to see like X happens during your day and you can go, gee, does that fit into one of these lanes? Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't, you probably don't write about it.
Yeah. Yeah, if you can't tie it back to the central theme.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So that I think all of that brings us to someone who's got, they've got their central theme. They're on some sort of regular schedule. They're sending it out. They're started to get subscribers. Maybe it's friendlies at first, just people in their network, past clients, current clients. Who else? Colleagues, people that you're in professional organizations with or masterminds or Slack groups, whatever. Maybe you also publish the emails on your blog and you've got a, you know, social media following that you publish the links to the blog. And then at the end of the blog, it has a, hey, you like these emails? You can sign up here and I will deliver on this promise every day or every week until the cows come home.
Yep.
So how do you, but let's say you get to a point where you're like, I don't know, you're at some number. Like, I'll think of a number. I was stuck at like 5,000 subscribers forever. Like, I started with maybe a couple hundred, and then I launched Hourly Billing is Nuts, and that launch brought in a ton of new subscribers. What I say a ton? I don't know. I think I launched with just under 500. Could be wrong. I think it feels like that. And then, and then how did we grow it from there? And then I got up to maybe 5,000. I was there forever. And then, you know, now it's up over 12,000. So, and I know what happened to do those steps. There were a couple of big inflection points and a couple of things that I can reliably do to increase the number of people on the list. Do you think back to any milestones that you had with like list growth?
Yeah, my milestone was 1,000 because I started with maybe 500 or 600 people that I knew, like flesh and blood knew. Mm-hmm. And then I started on Twitter in 2009 and I started to get some more. And then I sat at 1,000 for the longest time. It's like people would fall off, people would come on, people would fall off and people would come on. Right. But it wasn't until I got really clear on my central theme, which really, that took me a while because I just kind of started writing without really having an audience and then using social media as a distribution channel to get feedback. So yeah, I sat at 1,000 for, maybe a year.
Yeah.
It was really frustrating.
Yes.
Like, why me? Like, what am I doing? That somebody else is having all this success and I'm still sitting here with 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
so you think clarifying your central theme started to decrease the churn and so that new subscribers weren't getting sort of negated by people dropping off? Or do you think?
Well, I think my challenge was I let it play with my head. So I started out really focusing on consultants and then I started focusing on personal brand, which was different. Mm-hmm. So I was getting a wider audience, which grew the list faster, but it was harder to talk about. I mean, I can talk about personal brand till the cows come home, but you want to do it in a way that doesn't sound like a lot of kind of fluffy talk about personal brand. I mean, I had a very specific point of view. So it took me a while. An embarrassingly long while, actually, to figure out the intersection between personal brand and talking about consultants and eventually authority. So for me, that was what that was about, is that I don't think I was telling a consistent, I wasn't giving a consistent message. So I was going back and forth between this is what you need to do to become a successful consultant and this is what you need to do to grow your brand. I think I sowed confusion. It was my own fault.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, so let me think. Is there anything you do from like a tactical standpoint that you find reliably will increase readers, you know, these days, or subscribers?
It's the distribution of the content. Mm-hmm. Is that so I have my email list, yes, but the way that my email list grows is I distribute the content beyond the list. So that means I'm distributing it in social media, in LinkedIn, in Twitter. I'm trying to share ideas with other people, share platforms. To me, sharing other people's platforms is not what I would call a reliable way to grow. But if you do it well, it's very reliable, right? You have to pick the people with whom you're pollinating very carefully.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's, I think we talked about this a little bit last time. It's like there are people that where you do a favor for them, like maybe they've got a pretty small audience, mm-hmm. but it's like, you know, what does it take? You know, 45 minutes to do a podcast interview and it lives forever. I mean, it's a great right. use of our time. It may not go anywhere. But then the next one that you do, maybe with someone who's got a really compatible audience, and you start seeing some overlap. I mean, I've seen sometimes where I will do a podcast interview and I'll get 100 new subscribers when it comes right. out. It's like, I know that's where it came from. Mm-hmm. It didn't come from, you know, from anyplace else that day.
Yeah, 100%. Like that's one of the big growth channels for me. And obviously, the bigger the audience, so sharing someone else's audience or getting exposed to someone else's audience or introduced to someone else's audience. I think without fail, it's some kind of podcast or appearance, some kind of speaking engagement. It might mm-hmm. not get recorded. It could be like, these days it's all Zoom, but, showing up in front of somebody else's audience and the like you said, there's sort of two factors. It's like the size of the audience and the compatibility, like how open they are to your particular message. So, you know, when we've had Chris Doe on the show, when I went on, I can't remember if he came on here first or I went on his YouTube thing first.
I think you went on his first.
Yeah. And it was perfect alignment of audiences. What we talked about, we were in like deep agreement with. So the audience was like very compatible.
Oh, it was a bromance on our show.
Yeah. I love the guy. I think he's great. I love his mission. I love everything about it. And it's more of a design audience though, and I'm more of a software audience. So, but still, it was close enough that I get almost every application to my private coaching program down at the bottom. It says, "P.S. Where did you hear of me?" It's like on the future. It's mm-hmm. like, wow. Okay.
He has a huge audience. Huge audience. And the hourly billing is nuts message really transcends that.
Totally resonates with them, right? Yeah. So that was huge. But there are plenty of other ones, you know, I could list off names of podcasts that are that have a big audience, really good, you know, and just the host and I click and I think that has a lot to do with it. It's kind of an indication if it's gonna click with the audience. And so that's a thing you can do. That's a regular basis, go on a podcast tour where you find these shows where there's probably good alignment with the audience and hopefully there's a bigger audience and you do outreach to them and say, hey, you know, if, you know, I love your show. I listened to this episode where you talked to whatever, you talked to Chris Doe about pricing. I talk about very similar things. I'd love to come on the show and educate your audience about any one of these three topics, topic, you know, perfect show title. Mm-hmm. And then say, you know, if one of these sounds great, just shoot back a number and we can talk about scheduling and you can let me know, you know, if there's any onboarding for the podcast. And you just make a list of podcasts, go through that, send them out, go on a podcast tour. So that's, I think that's, it's a reliable way to do it. It's kind of slow. It's sort of a long game. Because there can be a really long lead time with podcasts because it can take a long time for them to come out. And so you might not see that bump ever, or it might be pretty far in the future. Whatever. It's just, I just believe, you know, as I think we said earlier, speaking, writing. To me, podcasting is the best bang for the buck speaking wise because it just takes, you know, under an hour and it lives forever, like you said, Rochelle. And at the end, you're like, you know, join my mailing list, go to valuepricingbootcamp.com and sign up for my free 6-day podcast. You know, it's like, I've got it down to a science.
And well, there's also that intimacy level, which we've talked about before, because you can write for somebody else's site and somebody can really like the piece, and and it's easier for them at that point usually to just click on something and sign up, but they don't seem to do it as often. And sometimes I think it's because the reader's allegiance is to that site. And so they figure, oh, well, I can see, you know, Rochelle on the site anytime. You know, it's different. And so they see you through the lens of that site. Now, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't make that part of what you're doing for other reasons. But I've just found with my clients, it doesn't necessarily result in a big rush of email subscribers. But you are getting more people reading your stuff and knowing who you are. So there's
right.
that.
Right. Yeah. I have no data on this. This is pure gut instinct, but I've never enjoyed that writing. I've done it writing for other people's sites. And it's like, it just doesn't usually
because it's work.
It's something about it feels different than going on and having a conversation with a host. It just feels different.
Here's why. Cause I do this with clients all the time. It's because you have an editor. And, you know, an editor wants you to write a certain thing.
That's what it is.
You're right. Yeah.
You're right.
It is. And
because it happens every time.
Yeah. Oh, I know. And I have one client who's dropped out. He's had some of the most amazing requests to do columns. And he's done them for a while. And then he's like, I'm done. I'm like, but look at the visibility you're getting. He's like, I'm tired of these editors telling me what I can and cannot do. I don't care. I'm not doing it. And it's because, I mean, what's great, when you have a good editor, they're protecting the voice of the outlet. But make no mistake, you're working for them for free.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's why. It's something that I recommend doing in certain situations where you want to grow your name recognition quickly, and you can, because those big publications don't take, you know, just anybody. You've got to have the right pitch. You've got to have the right approach. It's got to fit with their audience. You know, there's an art to it. But so there are some good reasons to do it, but it's generally not fun.
No. Yeah, and you nailed it. You 100% nailed it. That's why I don't like it. Because, you know, it's like, oh, could you write an article about this? Yeah, sure. Here's 1,200 words. And like, can you get it down to 350? It's like,
and can you say this line in there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. That is it. And in fact, I had a podcast interview set up. It was actually going to be a video one with a brand that shall be unnamed. That same thing. It was like, I was like, well, you can come, I'll talk about this. And they were like, okay, great. But could you drop the hourly stuff? We're kind of like pro hourly here, you know, but we didn't get to that point until we had been going back and forth over email for weeks. And what they were kind of trying to pre-edit what I said. And I was like, yeah, never mind. This is, you know, if you want to just ask me questions and I'll answer them and it goes out a lot, you know, or, you know, you can edit it later if you want, I don't care. But that is 100% it, is that they're editing it, and I can't stand that. It's just not fun, like you said.
Well, it's a different experience. I mean, I remember Oprah Winfrey at one point, somebody asked her, like, what's the interview that you're always afraid of? Or is there somebody that you really worry about? And she said, yeah, Robin Williams, because I never know what he's going to do.
Right.
I have no idea what's going to happen, which is why the audience loved to watch Robin Williams for exactly that reason. But yeah, you have to go with your gut about the restrictions that people want to put on you in order to make an appearance.
Yeah, I think in that scenario, in the past, what I've done, people would be like, oh, you know, would you like to write an article? You know, I love your stuff. I'm on your mailing list. I'd love if you do a guest post on my site. And I'm like, how about you write a post referencing these ideas? And don't worry about it. You just, like, you know, if you want to credit me, fine. If not, just write your own post, you know, because in cases like that, it's not that they're trying to like offload the work on me to create more content for their website. It's more like they want to share the ideas, but they feel like they're stealing them.
Yeah.
And so
it's respect.
Yeah. So yeah, it's nice. And I'll say, look, you can write it. You can copy one of my posts and publish it on your site if you want, and just link back to me. I don't care. You know, why do I not care?
Yeah.
Because the mission is to rid the world of hourly billing. So if somebody wants to spread the message, I don't care. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And that happens a lot. And sometimes we know it and sometimes we don't. I mean, I found my stuff published all over the place, but they use my name. They link back to the site. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, 100%. Me too.
Yeah.
Like plagiarism, I don't think that...
I'd rather that not happen. But it does.
Don't really care.
but it's the minority, generally speaking. And, you know, the original is always going to be more attractive than the copy.
Right. Yeah, it's just it's a dead end for the plagiarizing stuff's a dead end for them anyway. I don't like it, but I wouldn't, whatever.
We're not going to go around suing people about it.
Yeah, exactly. So we talked about going on a podcast tour. Obviously, starting your own podcast, it's a non-trivial undertaking, but that would be something that would help grow your list. They can play back and forth off of each other. That's probably an obvious one. Podcast tour, sharing someone else's audience or being introduced to someone else's audience. I talked about launching Hourly Bailing Is Nuts and how I had a huge spike in signups. I probably more than doubled my mailing list from launching. And you'd think...
You mean the podcast?
No.
Or the book? Bailing,
the book, yeah.
So
you'd think that you'd want to build up your list and then launch to that audience. But the launch itself creates a lot of... The launch itself creates more audience. I don't know why. I guess it's newsworthy that like a new book is in the world. Like this, someone worked on a thing and here it is. And there's sort of a, you know, new and improved. So there's a group of, it just has an effect on humans that, hey, there's a new thing in the world that we should look at. And so they do. And people who bought it would automatically get put on my list. You know, it's said like you give your email because it's digital download and they would end up on the list and then they get some questions about the book. If they have any questions about the book, if they had any technical difficulties downloading it. And then there's like an email that trends. It says, hey, you know, I have a daily list. If you want to learn more about the kinds of things that I wrote about in the book, you don't have to do anything. But if you don't want that, then just click on subscribe right here. And in that transition email, I give them the promise. Like the promise of the list is it's like a daily insight, a shot of B12 for your business every day. And it's like you will, by that point, they've probably already found themselves, hopefully, and usually they are glad they spent the time to read whatever it was, whether it was the book or the follow-up emails from the book. Mm-hmm. And then when they get this sort of transition email, it's like, hey, I know this is crazy, but it's a daily email. If that's not cool, you can unsubscribe. Otherwise, just sit back and enjoy.
Yeah, there's a couple of things we can unpack around that. And one is, of course, the launch. The whole effort of a launch is we're doing things that we're not doing normally. So we're hyper-focused on outreach. We're hyper-focused on this narrow, concentrated message. So launches are good for all sorts of reasons. But the other thing that's interesting about this is, you know, the newest list is always the hottest list, is what they say in internet circles. So the younger your list, and by that I mean the less time they've subscribed with you, the hotter it is because they're closer to when they made that decision to connect with you.
That's true.
Doesn't mean that you try to sell them 100 things in 100 days, but it does mean that that's your opening. Your opening. And people can stick with you for a long time. They may not buy. And that can be okay because you're sharing ideas and you're helping in their transformations. But it's that when you get people first on that list it's like the golden hour in photography.
Yeah, it's your window of opportunity. Mm-hmm. It's the biggest window of opportunity. I don't act on that. I know that's true, but I don't really act on it because I've got like buy this links at the bottom of every email. So it's it's not like I do particular. In general, I don't really do launch sequences with my list in general. So I don't get real sophisticated with that. I like to keep things simple because it's just me and a lot of that stuff falls through the cracks and I just screw it up. So I just keep it easy.
I hate the programming. I love ConvertKit, but boy, I hate doing the programming.
Yeah.
But I think it's also there are people, and I know, you know, everybody in the audience has experienced this, where you sign up for this list and what you think you're going to get is this knowledge. But what you get is it's obvious that you're in a sales
funnel.
Yeah. And it just feels like it. It's like there is this. And then the next one is there is this. And then this happened. And then I made $1 million. But I didn't know how to do this. But now I do. And you can buy my secret formula. And while on one level, there's nothing wrong with that, assuming that it's all like legit stuff and it really works. But it doesn't. like, where do you go after that? If that's what you open with,
right?
Where do you go? Like, how do you really develop a relationship with that person? It's very transactional, and you're going to have high turnover on something like that.
Yeah, it's a mass market move.
Yeah.
It's a turn and burn mass market move. So it's like a direct mail. It's fine. Fine if you want to do that. It works, but it works in just a very different way, and it's not the way I prefer to operate.
Yeah, no.
And it's not really what we're talking about here. Like what we're talking about here, well, I mean, if we focus on audience growth, I guess the takeaway here is like launches of some sort of new product or service or price change even, or, you know, like I'll be like, oh, I'm changing my coaching prices at the end of the year, like beating that drum. So that can actually cause interest. It makes sense. It was a little counterintuitive to me when I first sort of heard about the concept. But then when I looked back at my numbers, I was like, wow, that's true. Like whenever I launch a new thing, I get more subscribers, like not the other way around. It's like,
right.
And it's weird. It feels like it should be the other way around, but you know, they just go together.
Yeah. And it's, you know, not to get too like meta, but it is an energy thing. And you feel it. Like when we're doing launches, we're just so attuned to every little thing. And I feel like that's what brings people in. Yep. They feel that. They're like, oh, something's happening over there. I want to see what it is.
Right. I also think there's something about the whatever the product is, it's probably feels really tangible, even if it's digital, but it probably feels really tangible. Like it's probably hyper-focused. It's probably well-positioned. It's probably clear what the value proposition is. And it's, I think maybe it's just me guessing, but I think maybe if you look at like, oh, so there's this new book called Hourly Billing Is Nuts or Ditching Hourly or whatever. And it's, and it's like got a subtitle and it's like hyper-focused. And if it's in my case, way more focused than the mailing list, you know, generally in terms of positioning. So any kind of book or product or, you know, 5-day podcast challenge, it's like very specific what it's for. And so if you're interested in that very specific thing, then, you know, one of many of the planets in the content solar system, then, well, you're probably going to be interested in the other stuff. Maybe not, but the odds are pretty good if you're interested in this hyper-focused thing. So I think the hyper-focus of the product itself, plus all of your launch efforts and the energy created by like a crowd is all contributes to launches, growing your list.
Yeah. Yeah. And growing your revenue.
Yeah. I mean, I like, yeah, of course. So what else? What's another thing? I've got like at least two more things that reliably produce subscribers.
So we've talked about, well, to me, podcast and video series are kind of the same thing. It's kind of like what you just talked about. So you do a video series on X, or you do a mini training program or a mini challenge on something where you sign up and you're getting a, you know, a daily email or a video series on that. Well, you go with your next one. Let me think.
So it's kind of, I would label that sort of introductory sequence like a lead magnet. So if you have like a free 5-day course or you've got some sort of freebie, some sort of like checklist or something valuable, that's kind of a no-brainer for somebody with a mailing list to have some kind of short piece that isn't going to take a ton of time. Like I don't want a free ebook, you know, download 50 pages and be like, maybe I'll read this someday.
Not a white paper unless you're serving, I don't know, your rocket scientists.
Right. Like my best lead magnet is a proposal template where people are like, I don't know how to write a proposal. I've always just winged it and I've seen a couple, so I just copy them, but maybe they weren't even good. So, you know, that's a big one. It's, you know, a 5-page PDF, extremely useful. Other things, you know, the
my client avatar is like that.
Yeah.
Same thing with people. Just, you know, it's a form. You can fill it in, figure it out. Boom, you're done.
Yep. Yeah. StoryBrand's got something kind of like that too. I can't remember what they call it. It's like a story map or something. But it's just a worksheet, you know, but really valuable, really engaging. So some kind of lead magnet's almost, I probably should have mentioned that first. It's so obvious I forgot to even say it. But having something that seems valuable or is perceived as valuable by your ideal audience member, and they'll trade their email address for it. Just like check you out in a low risk way. So another thing that I don't know why I don't do these more because it works every single time is doing free webinars. So it might do a presentation on a topic and then have a half an hour Q&A afterwards. It reliably will get a couple hundred subscribers, like every time. Maybe if I did them more, it wouldn't be as many because I'd wear people out. But, you know, you just, you know, I use Crowdcast and just go on Twitter and say, hey, I'm going to do a live Ask Me Anything about proposals in an hour. Click here to sign up. And then they'll get like a follow-up email with slides and they can ask questions. And then they'll get that sort of transition email that's like, hey, if you want to learn more about stuff like this, then you can just stay on the list or you can click here to unsubscribe. But if you don't unsubscribe, you'll go through like I think it's like a 12 or 13 day orientation sequence and then be on the daily broadcast stuff. And it works like clockwork.
You know, the thing I wanted to say is a lot of people are doing, you know, live on Instagram, LinkedIn. You can do those things, but they don't tend to translate to list growth because they're just locking in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do YouTube lives and it doesn't work for list growth. It doesn't seem to work for list growth. It works more for what does happen with YouTube lives. I get people mentioning them, but not the live. It's the recording. So like after you do a live, then there's this recording. To me, it feels more like it works like a podcast where people go through all the old recordings and they're just like, and they just trust you more, but it doesn't necessarily translate into them taking the next step or like, it's very unpredictable.
Like it's more like PR to me. Like I think of that with a lot of the Instagram stuff. It's like you get out there, you have some people, maybe you get more people following you, you get more subscribers to your YouTube channel, mm-hmm. Which, you know, is fine. You're teaching more people, but it's not direct. You don't see cause and effect.
Right.
The way that you do with the webinar concept.
Yep. Yeah, I find that YouTube lives and I'm sure Instagrams or Periscopes or, you know, whatever, you're going to get access to all those audiences are different. Like people that use those platforms are different. You know, Twitter versus LinkedIn versus YouTube versus Instagram. It's all different. They tend to be different groups of people, different age demographically. So it probably would make sense to kind of do them all. That's what Gary Vee says. It's like create a piece of content and distribute it everywhere. Like, why not? It's like, well, yeah, you've got a team of 100 people.
Yeah. So, it's harder if you're you yourself and you.
Right. So I like to have one main speaking channel, one main writing channel, and then I kind of experiment with other ones and they're sort of sporadic. But anyway, the structure of a webinar and the expectation when you sign up for a webinar is that you're going to be giving your email address. So there's an expectation right there that if somebody clicks on the link, they don't think it's not a live stream, it's a webinar. And I'll have like a prepared presentation for a period of time, or I'll do another very popular one is doing website teardowns where people submit their websites and I go through it and say like, oh, you know, here are your opportunities for improvement, or, you know, I'm confused, but I don't know who I would send this link to, you know, whatever. So do a teardown. Right. And it has that combination of this sense of it's live. There's text interaction in the Q&A and there is, it's just a lot of trust built, but there's also an email follow-up path where it's like, you didn't get in without the email, where like something like the other ones that we were talking about, they can kind of get it for in exchange for nothing. And then
exactly.
Yeah. It's like not as obvious of a path. So webinars is a big channel. Every time I talk about webinars, I'm like, why don't I do more of those? They're great.
Yeah.
And fun.
Yeah. Well, once you get to do it, the lead up isn't always the most fun, but getting to it is fun.
You know me, right? Like I don't have like a big complicated sequence of events. It's just like, I don't do like a week long launch of leading up to, because people are not going to schedule their week around like when I'm doing a webinar. So I just announce it like the day before and the hour before, and that's it. And people are either available or they're not. And I'll usually get about 50% of the people that sign up will actually show up. Mm-hmm. And then over time, because again, it stays there forever.
Yeah, you've got a replay.
Over time, you end up with like quadruple the number of people that originally signed up watching it over time. So it's absolutely the greatest. I'm going to promise to myself for 2021, I'm going to do more of those webinars because they're fun. They're helpful. People love them. It's great for audience building. I'm totally in control of it. I don't need permission from someone else or have to operate on somebody else's schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So I just got to throw it in my calendar and do it. It's probably the number one thing you can do that is basically guaranteed to work. So,
well, it's that interactive piece. There's something I saw recently. I've seen a number of different people use office hours, and usually office hours are part of a product.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you have like a 4, 6, 8 week thing and you have office hours, which is an hour or two once a week where you're available. I saw somebody recently use that as an enticement to get on their list. Mm-hmm. That they do once a week, they do an hour. It's always the same window. And anybody who's subscribed can come on and ask this person anything they want.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's great for content ideas. It's great for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see what else. Another thing I do, and I'm actually in the middle of one right now as we record this, is do like a free course. So some kind of, it could be like a free video course, but I don't have any video courses. But if I had a video course, I'd probably do two. I'd probably do a kind of introductory free one and a more advanced or more in-depth paid one. And use the free one as a lead magnet, essentially.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So that would be one. But the way that I don't do courses like that usually, I do more of these interactive workshop things.
Mm-hmm.
They're online, but there's like a Slack room and
right, they're lessons, not standalone.
Right, and you can't binge watch the lessons. They come out daily or a few times a week, and have interaction with the community. The community can engage with each other. And I just launched yesterday my annual 10-day system challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And it was free, and there's like 450 people jumped in, and it's great. It's like, and it's not, and when there's a lot of people like that, I don't need to really drive it too much. Like the lessons as they come out, those are pre-written and they just come out on daily for 2 weeks.
They're all written?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
it's, did they go in a Slack channel?
Yeah. It also, this one, I'm experimenting this time also with email. So that they go out via email and they also are published in the Slack room, but obviously all the conversation happens in the Slack room.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if I like it yet. It's only the second day and I kind of don't want people just reading the emails and not participating in the community, but I guess that some people, I haven't decided if I'm gonna keep doing it like that.
That's one of those things where you have to decide, is it more important to give the person the learning the way they want it, or is it the petri dish that you want to create?
Yeah. So, I'm on the fence about it, and I'm going to do the pricing seminar again in a month or two, and it's got the same basic structure, but I haven't sent out emails before, but I might experiment with that this time because some people, there's a surprising to me number of people who are just all thumbs when it comes to Slack.
Oh, and, yeah. I'm surprised that that's true for your audience. I'm not surprised it's true for mine.
Mm-hmm.
So I find it's a combination of things. Like if I put certain things in Slack only, people will not see it.
Yeah. So, but the problem, so there's two problems with the email aspect. We're getting off topic here, but the two problems with the email aspect is, one is that they want to reply to the emails and talk to me, which is not the deal.
Mm-hmm.
The deal is talk to the community if you want to talk about it. And I don't like that. I don't want to put up that wall. So like when someone replies to me, it's kind of like, we're talking about this in the Slack. Here's the link,
Right.
So I don't love that. And the other thing is I'm not convinced that people who are just getting the email are going to get anywhere near the benefit out of it without actually engaging in the community. So I just believe that the community is where all the value is. And if they're just getting the emails, they're not going to be happy. It's free, but they're not going to be happy with the time that they spend on it in a vacuum. Anyway, and if you really wanted to do it all by yourself, just wait till it's over and go into the Slack room and binge, go through all the lessons because they'll be published by the end. So you could do that too.
Yeah, that feels weird.
Right. It feels weird, right? Because the community, then you're just like showing up to a party that's over.
Yeah, exactly. exactly.
like picking through the leftovers.
I know. I just picture somebody with those last little pieces of chips at the bottom of the bowl.
Yeah.
Warm beer.
Yeah, the scene in Caddyshack where the kid's going and drinking all the half-empty booze in the bar.
Oh, God. Yuck.
So, yeah, that's how I feel about it. So I'm not sure if I'm going to keep the email thing, but people have asked for it more than once in the past. Like, I'd love it if at least there was an email notification to get me to go into Slack because I'm not normally in Slack all day. I'm like, okay, that's a valid point. Anyway.
But the point of this all is that when you do these kinds of free challenges, learnings, whether it's, you know, audio, video, writing with or without a Slack channel, they will increase your email subscribers.
Yeah, it's another kind of launch, you know. So it's super effective. It's more work. It's, I think, as reliable as webinars. I think the webinars are a lot less work than a 10-day challenge. Even if it's totally automated, a 10-day challenge is like,
Well, it's 10 days. No matter what you do, you've got to look at what's happening for 10 days versus a webinar is over in an hour.
Yeah. And it is over. Like, you don't have to think about it. It's like it's like a shift at a restaurant. Like, there's nothing to think about later. Like, you either remembered to bring the ketchup or you didn't. there's no fixing it later.
Yeah.
So what have we've talked about so many ways to grow your mailing list.
But I think, you know, if we kind of circle back to where we started with this, I think that the thread that's going through everything we talked about is that you're doing it with intention, right? This isn't like, oh, I'll write this today. Oh, maybe I'll talk to my list about that. Or maybe I'll throw this out on Twitter. It's that you're doing it with intention. You know what it is you want to write about. You know what your lanes are. You know who you're writing to. You've decided what kind of format you want to use. You know, are you writing? Are you videoing? Are you doing a podcast? And then you've decided how you're going to deliver that in email, where you're going to distribute it. When you do that with intention, good things happen.
Yeah.
Right? And even if the good thing is that, oops, that didn't work. So I got to pivot and try this other thing now. It's just, you got to keep going, pushing forward and doing it intentionally.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I probably ought to wrap up soon, but I've got two more quick ones, I think, that are interesting. This is going to sound stupid, but if you are publishing on a blog, on a website or something, have a subscription form at the bottom of every article. Like, I did not publish my emails on my website anywhere for a long time. In fact, I don't think I actually put them on my site until we were trying to get Seth to come on the show because I wanted proof that I was like part of his tribe. I wanted to say, like, look, we are the kind of people that do keep showing up, and we're not just some like rando, you know, like people just trying to get Seth Godin on their podcast so that they're like increase their status or whatever. It's like we do the work. Rochelle and I show up, we do the work. But I realized at the time, the way my website was set up, there was absolutely no evidence. If you didn't already know me, it looked like my website was like brand new. There's no design to it. There's nothing there, basically. So I was like, fudge. I need to, because what I want, the vibe I was trying to create early in the mailing list, and I don't regret this. I think it was, I don't know if it was smart or not, but I don't regret it. Was very much a private community type of feel, like a VIP behind the velvet rope type of, like, you're either in or you're out. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not sharing this on social media. I'm not sharing it on my website. If you want in, you get in. And if you don't want in, fine. But, you know, so when people were bailing from my list, you know, maybe 100 people jumped off. It wasn't even that many. But when I switched to daily and people left, I was like, all right, you're not getting this content anywhere else. There's no RSS feed. You either subscribe or not. And I was kind of like a hard ass about it. And a lot of people were like, how come I can't share these? And I'm like, forward the email, you know, like, yeah, but I want to put it on social media. I'm like, sorry. Then I finally set up a system where the emails were also published simultaneously on my website. But again, there's no way to subscribe to it. You'd have to like visit the page because of the Seth interview. And then after that, right around the same time, I felt like I was at another plateau of subscribers. And I was like, okay, I'm finally going to give in and automate this and put the put a subscription form at the bottom of every post, like, hey, did you like this message? If you want to get them every day, sign up here, and set up automation so that it automatically shared to Twitter and LinkedIn. So it was like, it's like what any normal person would do normally when they were blogging. But I didn't do it for a long time, and shocker, it did increase the rate of signups, because yeah, people would see stuff on social media, they'd read the short article, they'd be like, wow, that's really cool, and then they'd sign up for the mailing list. And the conversion rate's pretty low, but it's still higher than zero, which is what it was before.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I get a lot of my people is from Twitter.
Yeah.
Publish things on there. There's always a link. There's always the, hey, if you like this, see that big orange bar, put your name in there, and it's going to come your way.
Right. Yeah. So the person who needs to hear this is probably not an email, someone who's already doing email, because they would have done this already in most cases. The person who needs to hear this is someone who's blogging and doesn't have, either has a mailing list or doesn't, but doesn't have a way for someone to subscribe at the end of every article. So, and I have worked with students who blog, but they are not capturing the traffic in any way. They're like not getting the email addresses. They'd be like, oh, great video, great free tutorial on, I don't know, JavaScript. But then there's nothing for me to, as a viewer, there's nothing for me to do after that. It's just like, okay, maybe I'll remember to come back here tomorrow. Nope.
Probably not. Yeah.
Probably not. So, you know, if people are coming to your website to read something, then every possible place that they would, you know, ask them for the email. You don't have to be, you know, annoying about it and pop-ups and everything if you don't want. But at the end of each article, they read it. At that point, they're going to know if they felt like they wasted their time or they didn't. And if they didn't feel like they wasted their time, then they might give you their email address so they get these in their inbox instead of having to come back to your website. So that's an obvious one, but I figured I'd call it out. And then the last one is not obvious. It's so in my, if you have some kind of, how would I summarize this? Sort of like leveraging your existing audience to bring a friend. So in the 10-day podcast challenge, you know, I announced it to my list. So a lot of people who are in it are already on my list, but I genuinely mean it. I was like, this is going to be better if you have a friend in here with you. So here's the link. Feel free to share it. Cause some people, sometimes they're like, oh, is this for the list only? It's free. Maybe it's not supposed to be public. So I explicitly say, bring a friend, bring a friend, bring a friend, bring a friend. I've even done that with my group coaching where that's a paid, you know, subscription. It's a paid membership. And last year, toward the end of last year, I said, hey, we're going to try something different. If you have any friends that you think might have questions for me or would benefit from some of the stuff we talk about, feel free this time to share the link and they can come in, participate. And it went great. You know, so it's so some way to encourage your audience to bring a friend.
Yeah.
You know,
it's to share, but it's a more intimate share. It's not, oh, share this on your Twitter and Instagram. It's invite one pal.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. If a friend of mine invites me to come to a webinar, it's like, you got to come on this webinar, then it's pretty good odds that the person who's doing the inviting has probably made a good decision, and that the person, the friend, the plus one, as they call them, the plus one is going to have a good time. Versus, you know, if some Google engineer shares a link to, you know, my webinar and they've got 150,000 followers, that's probably, the odds are very high that the signal to noise ratio is going to be bad, where you get a whole bunch of people who don't get the joke and affect the experience of the people who do, you know, so like not hecklers, but
right.
But to extend the metaphor, it's like if a bunch of people are in the audience and most of them aren't laughing, it's gonna affect the people who do think it's funny. They're like, oh, maybe this isn't funny.
Yes. Yes.
So it's like a curated, you're allowing your audience who already understands the message and is sort of drunk the Kool-Aid, and, you know, hey, grab a friend that you think would be good for and bring them into the fold more. Invitation only, but that's kind of a feel.
But it's thoughtful and other focused versus if you say, hey, share this with anybody you know, bring
spam
anybody.
The world.
Yeah, it's a different message. It's a different level of intimacy. I could see why that would work.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Cool. I'm sure we've forgotten some obvious
27.
Things, but, yeah. Yeah. So if there's something, dear listener, that you've used to grow your list and we skipped it or missed it, hit us up on Twitter and we can share it out. Maybe we'll bring a do a follow-up episode at some point. Who knows? It would be fun to do this periodically, though.
Well, I really want to think about this as a challenge, though. And it's, you know, to grow, either to start your list or to grow your list. And so you decide what the challenge is, right? What is it that you want to do in 2021 around your email list? Make it, you know, 1-2 bullet points, and then start with where you are now. How many subscribers do I have? 0. Okay. How many subscribers do I have at the end of Q1? 10, 100, 500, whatever those are. But I think, you know, let's think about this as a challenge and see what we can do together.
Love it. Awesome.
Cool.
All right. Well, that's it for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Rochelle Moulton.
And we hope you join us again next time for the Business of Authority. Bye.
Bye-bye.